This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
He's a stonemason and sculptor with a 40-year career in public art. You've probably seen and admired his work without knowing who created it. Kia ora and welcome to Sightlines, your guide to the visual arts in and around Dunedin. This show is brought to you on behalf of the Dunedin Public Art Gallery Society. This month on Sightlines, we're talking to sculptor Stuart Griffiths. He's lived in Otago since 1982 and has been a huge contributor to our art community in a wide range of ways, including through his acclaimed public art installations and as a stonemason, as a thought leader in the politics of public art, and as a facilitator bringing art to the people. Stuart, welcome to Sightlines.
Thank you.
Now, Stuart, you've had a long and successful career as a sculptor. You've exhibited in New Zealand and internationally, and you've been a lecturer at both Canterbury and Otago. But I want to start by going back and talking about your training, because right from the beginning, which is now almost 50 years ago, you might not want to be reminded of that, but it was, you had your sights set on a very specific area of artistic endeavour, and you still work in that area today. Tell us about that.
In some ways, I've always been a site-specific artist. And so being, I've worked in installation because that's what you're doing. You're project managing installations in a wide variety of sites and architectural, internal architectural, external landscape, and also gallery and museum situations. And it's all installation and project management. So my two hats that I wear between being a sculptor and a stonemason, they fit together often and pass each other in the night, and they're these things which seem to go seamlessly. And I think the buzzword nowadays is called a flow, and you create a flow between your skills and your opportunities.
Yes. There has often been a political narrative in your art, and I suppose that's what you're talking about. It's evolved for you.
It really has. The feminist art movement in the late 60s, early 70s really got that going. There's no doubt about it. In a funny way, the arts never had a postmodernist period. It was an architectural term. The arts really just went straight into contemporary practice. And it had actually been contemporary for a long time through the medium of photography anyhow.
So you've gone on from that start to not only create some of Otago's best known and most admired public sculptures, but you've also established adjacent expertise as a stonemason. And that's, I think, a skill that's been applied in some of your new work, as well as to the restoration of heritage buildings around Otago. I want to ask you about some of your best known public work as a sculptor and a stonemason. And I think perhaps the most prominent would be the installation at the entrance to the Dunedin Botanic Gardens, which dates to 1999. How did that come about, Stuart?
Just through an ongoing conversation with the people who were at the time the curators, directors and administrators of the Botanic Garden, who I'd known outside and working in the private sphere, and they realised the expertise that we were saving from times gone by at the time. I'd formed a company with two other stonemasons in the 90s to capture the lost tradition in stonework, which was fading very quickly. The main people who were in town who had worked through the 60s and 70s were moving into retirement, and their knowledge was disappearing. So we made a point of actually meeting them and talking with them and looking at their work and getting them involved in initiating new projects. And we got a few projects going to be able to achieve that through the doing of it, which is the only way you can learn, of course. They assisted in that knowledge.
Going back to the botanical gardens, though, because that's probably one that many, many people have seen. It's a very striking piece, and it's been there since 1999. How did that come about?
The conversation started when, as I said, I'd had associations with the people in the botanic gardens for quite a long time, and it just came about really looking at their plans to spend quite a bit of time just what you'd call renovating the gardens, really. The whole gardens, if you looked at it over the last 20, 30 years, has had a makeover. You wouldn't have noticed it because it's been done in a seamless way and done carefully and methodically, and they've worked through it. To say that I was there in the beginning would be stretching it a bit, but Mick Field, who was the director of the gardens at one point. He'd moved into a position of working on what they used to call special projects. And one of the special projects was for the beginnings of this exercise of restoration of the Botanic Garden was building a new entranceway, which had a specific look about it. This is the main entrance. And he drew a drawing of a concept drawing of the entranceway with a forecourt moving, which took you from the Northeast Valley entrance right through into the garden and had routes off it, you know, little avenues off it. At the end of this little avenue that he had designed was a piece of sculpture sitting in the middle of it, which was wee bit like a terminus point we went out from. And they were interested in what would that sculpture be? What was that point going to say to people when they entered the gardens, which was pertinent to being a piece of sculpture, but pertinent to being a point of reference to go from? So they engaged me in that idea of what is that? And that's right. And the site really meant that, okay, you're interested in what I'm doing there. I'm interested in what you're doing all around it to help inform me as to what I should do there. And you've done your piece and done the concept. I'll actually trace over that a sculptural concept, which addresses the issue of the sculpture, but also addresses the issue of how the sculpture relates to your plan, and did an overlay on that, which is what you see there now. Yes. And really the main concept and what I did was take an element out of the iron gates out the front, which hadn't been renovated quite yet, and they were just out of alignment. And one of the capitals on the middle of the gate, which was opposite the other capital on the other gate, which is right in the centre of the gates, there were these two scrolls. One was just higher than the other, and I liked that just because everything was symmetrical. I just liked that little bit of misalignment to give that little point of interest. You didn't have to do much. And repeated it with the stonework and the ironwork that you see there now.
So it's an amazing synthesis, really, of your sculptural work and your stonemasonry. I think, am I correct in thinking, Stuart, that it was commissioned by the DCC initially to commemorate the 150th anniversary of European settlement in Otago?
It was, and the two ideas really came together. They read it and saw it evolving and said, this must be it.
Yes. You worked with Laurie Forbes, which you've done before and you've done since, on the sculpture, which was titled Waterhead. And it's created in iron, I think?
Yes.
And it's not a traditional material for a sculpture. What was your purpose? There must have been, since there's a story behind that, what was your story?
Well, there was a technical need in the project to achieve what I'd drawn. And making it in mild steel, actually, which is obviously a variation on iron as we used to know it. And working with Laurie, who was a great tradesman, craftsman, in terms of how to resolve the design that I'd done, he did that immaculately. He knew the purpose for the project. It was probably the high end of the art form. And
yes.
As a welder, but also as a boilermaker. That's what he was trained at the Hillside Workshops. And he's taken those skills, those ancient skills, trained to him and making boilers for steam locomotives. Here we are adapting it to making contemporary sculpture.
Fantastic. I'm here with Stuart Griffiths. Stay with us for Snapshot, our rundown of what's on in Dunedin's art scene. As I said in opening, Stuart, a lot of Dunedinites will have seen and admired the Botanical Gardens sculpture, Waterhead, over the last quarter century without necessarily knowing who created it or why. But I don't think it's the only example of your craftsmanship in the Botanical Gardens. What else did you work on there?
Well, there are other pieces. Probably there is infrastructural work which we did, which involved the restoration of the herb garden where we used coconut stone. And I'd like to say that with the entranceway, we used Otago stone for this purpose of commemorating Otago, the blue stone in particular from Blackhead for the columns and the coconut stone for the paving. And we also used the coconut stone from, it's over towards Waipiata, Ranfurly Way, if anyone wants to know where coconut is. And the pillars were actually, instead of, it's a beautiful paving, but it's also a very nice stone to stack as well.
Yes.
So the pillars are made of Coconut Stone.
And there's also a stone arch, I think, near the Duck Pond. There is, in the Duck Pond.
No, there was a commission to design the bridge that's there, which is a bluestone arch with a concrete cap. The pillars in the herb garden are a cast concrete cap, which we produce as well. And it actually sits in a very formal way just beyond the one stone bridge, which I supplied for the Japanese element in the, with the little seated area in the duck pond there. And the two sit, one very ancient single stone slab crossing, one very, what you'd call very formal, I suppose is the word, one very informal. Yes. And they sit together very nicely as an element, which I know about. I don't think anyone else would think like that, but I've always been very aware of the two pieces sitting alongside each other.
Synthesized.
Yeah.
You've applied your stonemasonry skills in a number of projects across Otago, and two that I particularly want to mention because they are especially prominent and will be well known to listeners have included the Standard Building in Princes Street, and also in Queenstown, the very beautiful stone wall on Marine Parade into which a David Eggleton poem has been sandblasted. Tell us about the Marine Parade project.
Very interesting project in its own right. I'd worked with David Eggleton working, I had a commission working with the National Gallery in Wellington on a project called Art Now, working with probably New Zealand's foremost curator, Tina Barton, on signalling what was going on in New Zealand in contemporary art at the time. And they did a major project in Wellington, and instead of working at the National Gallery, they worked on different sites around the town. And I worked on the Kaiwhara, what is a reclamation into the harbour in Wellington, and they had a dirt road around it. And we put a curb, concrete curb around this road, and David wrote a poem for it, and we set it in text around this curb, and slowly over the years the curb got eaten away by the harbour wave action and storm action in that harbour, and people were disturbed by the fact it was just getting chipped away by this environmental element. But it was actually quite a charming thing, and they wanted to save it, and in the end we said, "No, well, that's just the way it went. It was put in there as a temporal work, and that's what happened." I think some people chipped away a bit of it for souvenirs, but that's part of it as well. So that idea of setting a poem into infrastructure was an idea we'd worked as an art idea with the National Gallery as an art project, and it was such a good idea and so well received. We said one day we might get an opportunity to integrate it into a public work.
Queenstown was your big moment,
and Queenstown was it, and Queenstown itself, being quite a sophisticated town in a lot of ways, even though it's a frontier town, interesting things happen in the frontier.
And can you describe the actual installation, if we can call it that, Stuart, for people that haven't seen it? What does it look like?
The sea wall, although it's a lake wall, was part of the redevelopment of downtown, right from the mall down the middle of town, right around to the new steamer wharf complex, where a big development was done. And the community was very interested in being involved in what the decision making. They didn't want a corporate moving in and just doing it in a corporate style. They wanted community involvement. At the time, I've done a lot of work in the area and knew a lot of people who are interested in this idea of community involvement. And to their credit, the Queenstown Lakes District Council decided to consult the community and went, well, how are we going to do this? And they called together a community meeting to form a charrette. And a charrette is a group which is voted by the community group who gather to represent their interest in the design and development of this project. And they chose from that group a very skilled group of people to achieve this end, and which is what they did. And one of the things they wanted to do was put a piece of sculpture at the end of the mall. Probably of, there's one there of William Rees, the first landowner, sheep runner in the area, who owned most of the land there. And I said, well, you don't, and they invited me to have a look at this idea of building a piece of sculpture in one way or other at the end of the mall. And I said, well, if you're walking down the mall and you put a big piece of sculpture there, it's right in the way of that wonderful view. And it's like a bit of a sore toe, if you ask me, if you put something there. let's have a look at what you're doing and we'll integrate something into your infrastructure, which you're building, the walls and the paving and the gardens. And because in my own private practice, I was involved obviously in building walls and gardens and what have you. So it was easy for me to introduce this idea of actually incorporating a scroll which I'd cast with the lettering in it, and the scroll moved through the schist stonework in a horizontal manner. As the schist is laid, the scroll was introduced to the wall and laid into it, which very seamless project, and looks like it should have always been there, which was very well received too. And a lot of art projects, but like the Botanic Garden projects, of course, one of the jobs to do as an installation is to integrate the work in a seamless way. So it looks like it should be there.
It's been very
successful. It makes sense why it's there.
Yes.
And that's the key. I've always understood that as a key aspect of site-specific working,
yes.
Whether you're a tradesman or whether you're an artisan or whether you're an artist. You know, the whole idea of crafting the work physically and conceptually and how they meld together to work is the dynamic which you always seek to achieve, whether it could be in an art gallery, it could be in a public space, it could be in a garden, private garden. It doesn't really matter. It's the same ideas that come through.
And you've achieved that very well, obviously, in Queenstown. There are lots of other projects that you've been involved in. I think in Dunedin, a lot of people will be familiar with the work that you did again with Laurie Forbes in Vogel Street as part of the warehouse redevelopment. Among others, in listening to you talk about your work, Stuart, it strikes me that in being a site-specific art installation sculptor, there's an element of work that a lot of artists don't have to deal with. With site-specific art, you've got to necessarily engage and collaborate with those whose site you are creating the work for. And you've talked a little bit about that, but at a very basic level, I'm sure I'm not the only one sitting here wondering how this impacts the flow of creativity. In 10 sentences or less, how do you manage that interface?
Very easy, because you do what should be done. And one of the things which has been achieved in recent times is reconnecting to where the public got left out of this public art feature. And we're talking about late 19th century, where art disappeared into the salons and then made its way into museums without actually being visible to the public. People who were on the inside knew what was going on. The public were left out of it. When it reappeared back in the 60s, mainly in the form of corporate art, it was a shock. It was the shock, what they called the shock of the new. It certainly wasn't the shock to the insiders who knew about it, but the public were left out of the conversation, and it was a confrontational point. And the idea over, you know, in recent times since the 70s was to reintegrate the public back into the conversation, to get them be part, to give them ownership of what happened in their communities.
Yes.
And we've seen a flourishing in recent times of Māori art in public, which is initially you could see there was a bit of shock, but not really. I think because it worked and looked so good, it's been accepted very well. We've seen it in Dunedin.
Well, Stuart, you have an enduring legacy in the form of the many beautiful examples of your public work that can be seen across the province. Your objective of bringing art to the people has been well and truly achieved, but your work, of course, continues. I want to thank you for coming to the studio today to talk to us about your work, what motivates it and what it's involved. And I'm sure I'm not the only one thinking the next time I'm driving past certain of these landmark public sculpture installations of which you have been an integral part, we will now know that that's a Stuart and we will applaud it. Thank you.
Okay. I prefer to just like the work. The fact that it's a Stuart's probably beside the point, of course.
Well, people will know that whether you like it or not now. Thanks, Stuart. And now here's Ross Curry and Linda Cook with the latest on the Dunedin art scene. This is Snapshot. Hi, Ross.
Hi, Linda.
Thank you so much for inviting me to this chat. 2026 has launched with some beautiful shows around town. It really does feel like Dunedin has woken up and is alive with art right now.
Yes, Maury Place has had a strong launch at the Hutch Gallery with Ed Ritchie's sensitive veneered works. These works really reward a slow look.
And over the road at Olga, there's new paintings by Michael Greaves. These dreamlike imagined gardens sit somewhere between the memory and landscape. They edge into abstraction. If you're quick, you can still catch that show before it closes in March.
And at Dunedin Public Art Gallery, March is shaping up to be a particularly exciting month. The abstraction in Aotearoa is at the Dunedin Public Art Gallery and continues through the month. This exhibition brings together a wide range of approaches to abstraction and includes works by Louise Henderson and Gordon Waters, artists who are foundational to the history of abstraction here. There's also a DPAG book launch to replace the previous Beloved book, and that's coming out at the end of March alongside a new ground floor show. Also at Dunedin Public Art Gallery, Peter Hawkesbury has a new exhibition in the ground floor gallery space, so it's a good time to pop in.
Always a good time to pop in. I'm excited about that book. I'm keen to spend time with ceramic artist Peter Hawkesbury's work. His pieces are complex and deeply considered. He builds small sculptural forms from clay piece by piece in a way that feels both patient and radical. His practice feels almost architectural in its thinking, but it's intimate in scale. Writer Lucy Hammond once described his work as unpredictable and totally compelling, which I feel is spot on. Another major moment this month is the conclusion of painter Rhys King's Francis Hodgkins Fellowship. His exhibition opens at the Hocken on the 14th of March, and that runs through till August, so it gives the audiences a generous amount of time to really engage with the work.
And of course, 2026 doesn't have anybody as a Francis Hodgkins Fellow because it's been suspended. And so we'll come back to that next month and also to Rhys's exhibition. And we'd like to talk about what the suspension of this means to the wider art population in Aotearoa. But I understand you have an exhibition out at Port Chalmers.
Oh, yes, I do, actually. My exhibition's at Pieces Gallery in Port Chalmers, and it's titled Arresting Matter. I'm bringing together a new body of paintings and some selected works on paper.
Yes, great to see another new gallery opening in Port Chalmers. That's a great title, Linda. What's the meaning of it?
For me, the title speaks of how the materials arrest me, seize me in the process. My eye and hand begin to understand where those elements I've gathered want to go. And then as I immerse into the process, it unfolds and tables turn and I begin to arrest the materials. But enough on me. Further information will be available at Pieces Gallery.
Can you tell us where Pieces Gallery is in Port Chalmers?
Yes, Pieces Gallery is on 20D Beach Street. That's the road opposite the port in Port Chalmers. And it's open Thursday to Sunday, 11 till 4.
And for you fish and chip fans out there, it's very near the fish and chip shop, right?
Correct.
Okay, so elsewhere around town, Milford Galleries are showing Manutaki, which translates as lead bird. Curated by Vanessa Cook, it's a group exhibition bringing together some of Aotearoa's leading artists. And Manutaki runs until the 9th of March. Brett McDowell Gallery is showing ceramic work by Madeline Child, followed by Suji Park later in the month. And finally, RDS Gallery is showing new work by John Cox. His exhibition, Human Error, runs from the 6th of March through to the 11th of April. Another one to add to the list.
Wow, so there's plenty to see around Dunedin this March, from major public gallery exhibitions to more intimate gallery spaces. It really feels like a month for slow looking and deep consideration.
Absolutely. A good time to get out, no matter the weather, spend time with the work, and follow those sidelines across the city.
Thanks, Ross and Linda, and thanks to you, our listeners. If you'd like to hear today's show again or listen to previous shows, you can find us on the Otago Access Radio and DPAG Society websites, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to join the Society, you can find a form on our website or join at the Dunedin Public Art Gallery reception. Thanks to contributors Ross Curry and Linda Cook, and producer and DPAG Society President Jonathan Quayle. Join us again next month for another dive into the visual arts in Dunedin and beyond. I'm Sally McMillan, and you've been listening to Sightlines.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.